You might have noticed, newspapers, TV stations, and other news outlets are dropping like flies in Canada these days. Whoops, there goes another one. But that's okay, because it leaves more room for independent media, like Rabble.ca. You can join the independent media revolution too. Go to www.rabble.ca/donate.
Asia Pacific Current.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links.
Good morning, listeners, and you were listening from a bit of a mellow song by Kate Vigo, Something Has Changed. But nothing much has changed here, has it, Giselle?
That's not true, Pierre. Everything has changed. Why must I correct your inaccuracies as we go to air?
Every time. That's why we have... the youthfulness and experience.
That's right. It's a very thorough fact-checking exercise we run here in the studio. Good morning, listeners. This is, we should tell you, this is our last show for the year this Saturday, the 17th of December. We will be back in February. We'll give out those details at the end of the program. But what we thought we would do today is a bit of a year in review. We'll do the news from around the region because obviously there's been much activity across Korea, the Middle East, etc. And we'll just provide you with that final update. But of course, in the second part, we'll do a year in review to reflect on some of the major achievements, but quite frankly, also some of our setbacks across the region.
That's right. And of course, if you want to know more about all this information, you can always look at our website, which is all the W's at awl.org.au, Facebook and Twitter. So there you go. And I think I forgot to say my name is Pierre, but your usual people and Giselle's there, so laughing away. But yes, that's right. So stay tuned, and thanks to Solidarity Breakfast for another interesting program. So we'll go straight to our first news item. We go to Lebanon, where the Lebanese government marked International Human Rights Day, the 10th of December, by deporting Sujana Rana, a Nepalese migrant domestic worker who was involved in the struggle for the rights of migrant domestic workers in Lebanon. Now, a fellow labour worker activist, Rosie Limbang, remains in custody, also facing the threat of deportation in Lebanon. An international campaign has been launched to stop the forced deportation of Rosie and calling for her immediate release. Now, obviously, this crackdown on migrant workers in Lebanon is really only the tip of the iceberg, with millions of migrant workers all around West Asia continue to face brutal exploitation and repression. And we've covered it many times before on this program. But if you want more details, please see our website and you'll see lots more stories.
In Turkey, following the bloody attack against police in Istanbul by the Kurdistan Freedom Falcons, which killed 44 people, the Turkish government has continued its scorched earth policy of using any pretense to go after any real or potential political opposition. In the aftermath of this bombing, the Turkish government conducted a major sweep by rounding up hundreds of people, many of them members of the Kurdish People's Democratic Party. Included in these arrests were Kagla Demirel and Basim Konka, two HDP parliamentarians from the southeast regions of Turkey. Amid ongoing bombings by the Kurdistan Freedom Falcons, the PKK and ISIS, and widespread government repression, the situation for workers in Turkey has deteriorated markedly.
And we now go to next door to Iran, where a jail labour activist is facing more harassment. Benhan Ebrahimzadeh, a labour activist with the Committee to Pursue the Establishment of Workers' Organisation and a Children Rights Advocate, is facing a new round of interrogations and harassment while in jail. Bannon has been in jail since 2010. He was originally given a 5-year sentence for the crime of organizing, but because of his continued activism while he was in jail, he received a new extended sentence of 9 years. Benham has been brutally treated while in prison, and recently his family have also been harassed while doing a prison visit. Iran has unfortunately become a prison gulag for labour activists, with countless workers jailed for attempting to organise.
In India, in early November, the government of Narendra Modi announced that they were withdrawing from circulation the 500 and 1,000 rupee notes. People had just 50 days to hand them into the banks. The stated intention by the government was to stop the cash economy and raise revenue. What is now being seen is that this edict is having a devastating effect on workers all over India. From the south in Tamil Nadu to the textile strongholds in the eastern region of Maharashtra to the foothills of the Himalayas in Uttarakhand state to the capital region of New Delhi, workers are either not being paid their salary or losing their jobs in the thousands. And of course, when I was in India in November this year, it was about a week after the introduction of this policy, and certainly it was foreseeable that that was going to be the impact.
Yes, and it's incredible reading some of the stories there, the huge impact that it's had. And now, from what I hear, some other countries want to do the same. So,
did I tell you that when I was there, we were told, so that was 5-6 days after the introduction of the policy, and people are queuing up for hours, days, sleeping in queues. I think they were up to a count of about 50 people that had died in queues in that number of days from heat exhaustion, from other general poor health effects that if people were in their homes, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Tragic. Now, unfortunately, we go to another tragic story. I think we've got a bit of a tragic mini news this week. Another worker has been killed at a Bangladeshi shipbreaking yard. Earlier this month, Shan Jahan was killed while working on a container ship in Chittagong, Bangladesh, when he was struck in the head by a large piece of iron. As with many other workers, Shah was not provided with any safety gear or heavy lifting equipment. Unfortunately, his death is only the latest one to hit the Chittagong shipbreaking yards, where unions are heavily repressed. And of course, as we've brought to you on this program, this death only comes after a few weeks after the horrific explosion and fire at the Gadani shipbreaking yards in Pakistan that claimed around 30 workers.
And in Korea on Wednesday this week, the Seoul High Court upheld the jailing of Han Sung-kyun, the president of the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions, for the crime of organising demonstrations. The court sentenced Han to 3 years imprisonment with a fine, which is a reduced penalty from the one he received a few months back. Nevertheless, this once again shows the political nature of the legal attacks against the powerful South Korean workers' movement. In light of the massive anti-President Park mobilizations and her subsequent impeachment, this ruling shows that the Korean working class is still facing hard battles ahead.
Now, given that his sentence was cut from 5 to 3 years, is that a good news story, Giselle? Does that qualify?
No, it says that the battle is alive. So it's not... This is a big question that you've asked me, Pierre. So,
short answer, concise.
No, I think we're holding. I think we're holding position, but it says it doesn't mean we're wiped out of the battle. It says that it's still alive. That's how I read it.
All right, no worries. All right, as the last item in the news, we go to the Philippines, where in a long-running saga, there was crew members from a Philippine tuna company of the Citramina Group in earlier this year were actually detained by Indonesian waters for illegal fishing. Now, unfortunately, the ship company basically forces the fishermen to go and raid other countries' fishing areas, but the company basically just abandoned these fishermen, and the captain was left in jail in Indonesia, even though he had a very serious illness. Now, unfortunately, Captain Wilfredo died last month in Indonesian jail as a result of his illness. And now the company has also not only saying that that wasn't their fault, but basically they're even refusing to help the family to repatriate their body back to the Philippines for a burial. So that's not another good news to finish up, is it, Giselle? We should have, but maybe we can give some a better roundup for the end of the year roundup.
I think we can treat our listeners with a bit more respect. I think they too are feeling the pressures of the economic crisis. It's important to confront the reality of the situation in the world and ready us for battle.
That's right, and this is the reality. We are still in the truth era.
Freedom and safety are two of the most important values shared by our community. As the largest independent human rights organisation for refugees and people seeking asylum in Australia, the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre delivers more services on the ground and more free hours of support to where it's needed most. A donation of $20 to the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre provides 2 weeks of food for a family over the holiday season. Please donate now at asrc.org.au or call 1300-DONATE. The Asylum Seeker Resource Centre is a proud 3CR supporter.
Your love is lifting me higher than I've ever been lifted before.
Renew to 3CR in this, our 40th year of Radical Radio. Call 9419 8377 or donate online at 3cr.org.au, and we'll be at your side forevermore.
We'll be at your side forevermore. Does that not just fill your heart with joy, dear listener?
That's right, that's right. That's an uplifting type of announcement. It's just on
13 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. You're listening to Asia Pacific Currents with Pierre and Giselle. And we're about to go into a year in review, Pierre. I think we can't go past as our first item.
Ooh. Yeah. This is unscripted, by the way, so we'll...
Don't tell the listeners that. Let them think we don't know how to read from our notes.
Well, we don't.
180 million. I know the activists in Korea, in India, are a little bit like, oh, comrades, we're not sure if that's quite accurate, but we're running with it. 180 million for the 2nd of September general strike in India, right across the country.
No, I think that is something to talk about, to celebrate, and actually to mark, because given, you know, all the things that have happened in the world this year, all the space in the papers and the news about all other kinds of events, you know, you'd be hard put to actually find out that there was a general strike in India and they had at least 150 million, but we'll go with 180 million.
And this is what's so remarkable about it, you know, the difference between 150 and 180 million is still bigger than the population of Australia.
And I think 30 million, the difference 30 million would also still be like the second biggest strike ever in world history, apart from the Indian strikes over the last few years that have been over 100 million.
Of course, that figure is, I mean, when we're comparing it to numbers in Australia and other smaller populated countries, it is staggering. But I think it's also important to remember the context in India as well. The election of the BJP government, which many people, and I am one of those people who would argue that that is in fact a fascist government that is spreading Hindu chauvinism across the country. We're seeing raids on people's homes under the mere suspicion that they might be eating beef. Raids on abattoirs as well, under the suspicion that they might be killing beef. So, you know, that is
cattle.
All right. So what, beef is when you eat it and cattle is when you kill it. Okay. The phase of the life cycle of a cow, I'm sorry.
And I'm a vegetarian.
I just eat what gets put in front of me. Apologies, listeners. It's But I mean, so people being attacked in their homes, people being attacked in their workplaces, and fascism, so this anti-Muslim, pro-Hindu chauvinism is being directly used to try and break the workers' movement.
And they can get and have a strike of 180 million. And to me, what is wrong with our movement? It shows the weakness of our movement when such a historic, and it is historic, the fact that, you know, if you look at general strikes in the world and the numbers and even like the percentage, I mean, if that is actually somewhere between around 15% of the population, of the total population of India, I mean, India's, 1.2 billion people, so 180 million is well over 10%, about 13 of the total. So it's probably 20-25% of the working population. And it is historic. And the global trade union movement, the global workers' movement, hardly batted an eyelid to celebrate it. I mean, we should have all been celebrating it in our workplaces to think our comrades did such a huge strike. And we can talk about how effective it was and all those kinds of things, but that's further on. But the fact they actually had it was fantastic. And the fact that it hasn't had much of an echo, I think it's also incredibly interesting. So I think that was a very good point to start off the celebration. And something like that in India, the fact that, and they have had other general strikes in the last few years with, huge numbers as well, really brings up the other sort of major area, in our region where you can see, and I'm talking about China, where, China, in terms of industrialization, is years and years ahead of India. And the amount of workers they have there is even greater. But we hear so little. Strikes are often quickly repressed or finished quickly. Labor activists get jailed. But there seems to be very little movement within China. Or even, I don't think... Correct me
but
if I'm wrong.
China's got a different history to India. You can't remove that context from, the labor movement develops in battle. It doesn't develop in a vacuum. So it's not a matter of where you put workers and where you put factories. A labor movement develops like it is the battle that gives the resistance.
That I totally agree with that, but it's also the fact that the there's very little that comes out from China that we know of. I think, it's, again, from a global level, for the working class movement, if you looked at, where should workers get organised, where could we do solidarity with, you would think, China is a slightly important place.
Yes, but the capitalists agree, which is why it's really hard.
Yes. Well, I was trying to keep, that's right. And, who knows, maybe one day in the future we'll be able to get an interview with a labour activist from inside China.
Yeah, and then they get killed. There is a reason we don't do that.
That's right, but I was assuming that the day that we will do that, it will be safe.
Yeah, I get you. All right, I'm picking up what you're putting down, Pierre.
That's good. All right.
Yeah, well, one of the tendencies when we do a news roundup unscripted and without notes is that I tend to focus on the stuff that's recently happened because my memory doesn't – I always get December, January, like the first half of the year falls into the previous year for me. So, but I do want to talk about a significant – event that happened on the 19th of November in Malaysia, and that was Bersih 5.0. And we've seen so Bersih was a movement, you'll recall, listener, that I think they started organising in 2006, but the first demonstration was 2007. And this is we saw like 20,000 Malaysians come out on the street, and this was in a context of this absolute suppressed Labor movement, you know, so the ISA, the Internal Security Act of post-independent, all of that pretty much wiped out the Communist Party, all of the left, etc. So we didn't see much activity in Malaysia until around 2007. It's like it came up from nowhere almost. And then in this year, 2016, so the focus of the campaign is still the same, that being clean and fair elections, this anti-corruption movement. But this year they called for the resignation of Prime Minister Najib, because of, you know, his pilfering or stealing, so we'll just call it what it is, stealing billions of dollars from Malaysian from Malaysians, basically. And, of course, we saw the arrest. 15 of our comrades got arrested the day before. So still that tactic that we saw under the Internal Security Act of just basically finding your opposition leaders, picking them up, locking them up and taking them out of circulation, except 40,000 people still protested. So, I mean, it does show that there is something there regardless of whether you take the leaders out or not.
That's right. There is dynamics that can continue, and sometime, you know, while we focus on particular events, the dynamics and the social struggles continue over many years, up and down, you have to say, you know. That's right. And certainly for a downer, I'm afraid, we can go next door to the Philippines, where in the last 6 months, Giselle's just shaking her head.
I mean, it's abhorrent. What to say? Can anybody keep accurate figures anymore? I mean, last count was 6,000. 6,000 people murdered on the streets under the guise of this war on terror.
War on drugs.
Sorry, that's what I meant.
Yeah,
sorry,
apologies. War on drugs. Not that it really matters because they're just being killed. Yeah, look, I think your initial comment, abhorrent, what else could we actually say? Mass murder, terror. It's actually a climate of terror. It's state-sanctioned terrorism, I think, you know.
But what's interesting is how polarised Filipinos are about it. So if you're not the target, then or you know, you look like and smell like and could be one of the targets, then the propaganda machine is actually being very successful, because ordinary middle class Filipinos are saying, oh, well, you know, drugs are destroying our community, and you know, we do need a government that is going to sort that out. So it is that we're in that period of strongman politicians again, you know, or dictators that are going to come in and just do stuff.
That's right. And look, and it's really, and of course, you know, we've said it before, we'll say it again. I mean, this war on drugs, these killings are affecting the working class communities in the Philippines, no one else. And it's hard to see when it's going to stop and how it's going to stop. And, you know, like, yeah, I agree with you. It's abhorrent, and it's, there's no words really to really describe how it would be like. And then, of course, the prisons are overflowing in the Philippines.
That's about, they're just going to kill them. That's how that one ends.
Well, of course, I mean, the interesting thing, the ironic thing is prisons are always full of drugs, you know, and especially where, like, they're overflowing, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, let's go.
We've got 5 minutes. Yeah. There are places we must cover. We must go to Syria. We must do South Korea. We must do Thailand. There are three we can't finish the show without covering.
And Turkey.
Okay, Turkey.
1 minute each. Go. You can choose the first one.
Syria, I don't even know what to say about Syria, and I think the time has come for AAWL to acknowledge in relation to Syria, AAWL being a united front organisation that brings together all of the different political perspectives of the labour movement together on joint actions, and at this stage, actions that are related to international industrial action, workers' rights, those issues. Right now, it is really hard to find that united front position in relation to Syria. And I think that demonstrates how effective that particular war is in relation to breaking the workers' side internationally.
Yes, I agree. And especially on that last bit, I think the disaster of Syria is really a reflection of the weakness of the left. And how we haven't been able to really do anything to understand it, and you know, we still seem to be stuck at the start, and even the labor movements nearby, and I'm thinking, well, Egypt, we know where that's gone with the repression there, but even in Turkey, the repression there now, and as we brought in the mini news, is massive, and I think. My feeling, and you know, would be that the progressive labour movement in Turkey is probably just trying to survive.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, there's not a lot we can say about this. It's like I said, that's the period that we're moving into where some things can't be said for the life and protection of people in that country.
Oh, look, I mean, it's obvious, you just have to look what's happening, and it's obvious that the workers are under incredible pressure in Turkey. You know, the only workers that I can see that are still moving, whatever, are the ones in Iran in prison, because the repression can't really get much worse. So
very quickly moving to Thailand, I have a controversial question to ask you.
Go for it.
Do you think we've lost entirely in Thailand? Is our side gone?
Our side is never gone.
Okay. Good answer.
Even in the concentration camps in the deepest years of Nazi Germany or in the gulags, you can say we are being terribly beaten and we are almost gone. But the struggle, that those social dynamics continue. Me and you might be dead, but the next ones will rise up. It might take a long time.
South Korea, they're certainly giving the capitalists a run for their money there.
I think that's very, very interesting because, yes, I think they've done fantastic.
I mean, the impeachment of Park is, you know.
But now, well, this is now, I think this is very interesting because in some ways, you can even go, you know, to sort of Thailand. I mean, if they get rid of the military, well, what's next? Here they've got rid of the president. I mean, different situation. But what is next, you know, because the ruling party is still there. So who are they going to have as president? Blah, blah, blah.
And that is a perfect note to end on. What's next? What comes next? Comrades, it's 29 minutes past 9 o'clock, which means we do have to go, but obviously the struggle continues, and AAWL is not closing down for the year. Our radio show is, and our mini news is. We're still contactable, so if you need us, get us on email, and certainly we're following events internationally because we think there is going to be movement.
But if you want to know what's next, have to listen to us again in February next year.
That's right. Our first show back is Saturday, February the 5th. It's always the first Saturday in February. So thanks for all of your support, your financial support, your listening support, your political support for our program over the last year. We'll be back next year for more news, current affairs and analysis from the Asia-Pacific region.
And have a great, safe and healthy Merry Christmas, Happy New Year holiday break. And that's all from me, Pierre Morrow.
And coming up next is Palestine Remembered.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.